is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Hey, hey, happy Thursday, everybody. Welcome into the Lombardi Line presented by DraftKings alongside former NFL general manager Michael Lombardi out there in Jersey. Stormy Bonantoni here live from downtown Las Vegas, Circa Resort and Casino. Got a great 2 hours on tap for you today. And Michael, before we get going here real quickly, yesterday was your birthday. So I do need to know, what was the birthday meal of choice? How did you close out the night yesterday?
Well, I mean, Millie was traveling, so that made it very tough to have the birthday meal because she was coming back from California helping our oldest son get handled out in his new job with the 49ers. We both have a rooting interest, which is awesome. Yes. And so the great Bill Berman, he just went to work, made sure we had chicken wings, we had French fries, we had Caesar salad, kind of stood out in the backyard. We solved all the problems. Here's what the most dangerous thing about the birthday, Stormy, is my oldest son gave me a karaoke player.
Ooh.
Which is meant for the backyard. It's a speaker, but you could do karaoke. This is going to get dangerous. This is going to result in someone getting arrested for crowd noise in Ocean City this summer. I'm just warning you. It's not going to be pretty. Berman was singing last night. We went from Peter Cetera to Kenny Loggins, morphed into a little Jackson Brown, which he couldn't pull off. Tried to do Barry Gibb, not so good. Came circling back around, a little Barry White. I don't know if that's going to work. But anyway, that's what we were. So we sat in the backyard and we both all looked at one another and said, this could get really dangerous. Because what you have to understand about the backyard in the summertime, Stormy, and you certainly are welcome to come anytime, the playlist is the most dangerous thing. Most dangerous. Because it comes with especially when the boys are here with the summer, with their families, it becomes a little bit of, oh, that song's horrible. Why would you put that on there? Or, everybody's judged. And it's a very, very difficult thing. Although I will say this, just for reference, we reached the pinnacle of the playlist last Saturday. We really did. Because we had a very special guest in the backyard. And he signed off on the playlist.
The special guest, am I allowed to know who the special guest is? Can I ask? Or is that?
Well, I was going to see how, we're going to play that. So our coach, our favorite coach, Coach Belichick, was moving his boat from Annapolis up to where he summers in Nantucket, where he's always has. And he stopped off and spent the backyard. We had dinner. We throw some steaks on and he happened to just throw out there, Mike, is this your playlist? And I said, no. Bill, it's not because I don't control the music out here. I got fired 3 years ago from playing the music because it was too much Springsteen. So it's Bill Berman who handles the playlist here. And he's like, oh, Bill, great playlist. So he's labeled the playlist in his phone now the GOAT list, the GOAT playlist.
Wow, that's
which
awesome.
You're not going to be – a lot happened that night in the backyard, which got a lot of people off the hook on – well, one on playlist for sure. One maybe on wine too. So we'll see. It was good. It was a fun evening.
Good. I'm glad that you had a good time last weekend. You had a good birthday night. Kudos, Bill Berman, for coming in the clutch with the meal and the electric karaoke playlist situation, that. But when you get Bill Belichick's approval
– I'll send you a video on break. I'll send you a video on break. You're not going to like it. It's not pretty.
I can't wait. I have so many questions. Can't wait to get into some commercial break conversation of your go-to karaoke song and all of that. It'll be great. To set the table for what we got going on the rest of the show today, coming up in about 30 minutes, VSiN's own Mike Somich, host of The Handle, is going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on the Stanley Cup final as well as some day baseball. Plus, he has an article up on VSiN.com right now about how to create your own NFL power rankings, get you set for the NFL season. Then later on in hour two, former NFL offensive lineman turned analyst in NFL and college football, Jeff Schwartz, is going to join us. He's also someone that played at Oregon, but loved and covered the Pac-12 for years. So excited to have that conversation with him, get his thoughts on the Ducks in the Big Ten. They host Ohio State in week 6. Really, really good conversation there. We've also got Michael's summer school assignments that will continue for all 32 teams. It's a no way, no doubt day. We are locked and loaded with it all. But what we're going to get started with is some headlines around the National Football League and sports in general with news or noise. Roll it.
Is it news?
Corleone is a man who insists on hearing bad news immediately.
Or just noise.
Are you going to act like this is news?
Just noise.
Let's separate the impactful from the insignificant with one simple question. News or noise?
Let's get into it. The Associated Press came out this week asking NFL awards voters to consider the following criteria when it comes to their choice for Comeback Player of the Year. Writing, the spirit of the AP Comeback Player of the Year award is to honor a player who has demonstrated resilience in the face of adversity by, and here's the clarification, overcoming illness, physical injury, or other circumstances that led him to missing playing time the previous season. Is this new criteria news or noise?
Well, I mean, it's news because Twitter Femi came out. I mean, did you see Twitter Femi going crazy over this? I mean, when you get Twitter Femi to come out, you got news. I mean, this was historic. The way he came charging out of the gates, you had to be impressed by that, right? Look, he's upset that there's guidelines. I think there should be guidelines. I'm always asking for, like, I don't know what we're voting for. I don't want them to tell me to vote for somebody. But I want them to tell me to vote for a cluster of people who qualify, right? I'll make the decision, but tell me who qualifies. I like it. I think it clarifies something. Twitter Femi did not like it. He was very anxious about it.
He said, make sure you start giving me what something along the lines of criteria for MVP, how it's only quarterbacks, right? Like, let's make that the distinction next. The AP, though, clearly not in love with Joe Flacco winning over DeMar Hamlin, Geno Smith winning over Christian McCaffrey, wanted to give a little bit clearer picture. And for us as bettors, I think this is news because, to your point, it can help us eliminate people. Sam Darnold, 20-1. What's he coming back from? Russell Wilson, also 20-1. What's he coming back from? Getting benched the last couple of games, right? Not having a great season. So I think that this is important for us from a betting perspective. Let's move on here. The UFL, Michael, has announced 8 players have signed with NFL teams since the season's close. Rumored to be 2 more deals that have not yet been confirmed yet. But news or noise that we are seeing some folks make that transition and get signed in the NFL?
Well, I think it's news, and I think it's news that happens so quickly, right? I think that's the most important factor. And these kids have played. I mean, you know, they've played all year to get this opportunity, and there's no guarantee they're going to make a team. But certainly, I think what we're seeing is that teams have paid attention to the teams that are going on in the World League. They're watching it. They're scouting it. And look, it doesn't matter where you come from. It matters how you play, right? Yeah. So when you think about it, when you look at the kicking situation with Jake Bates, who kicked for Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't he kick for Michigan up there? You know, and he signs a contract to compete with Michael Badgley at the Lions. I mean, this is great. This is what the league should be about, a chance for guys to redeem themselves and not have a predisposed opinion of it.
Yeah, Bates was with the Michigan Panthers in the UFL. He played his college ball at a couple other schools, Arkansas and Arkansas Central, where he was largely a kickoff specialist because he was playing behind other good kickers that ultimately ended up getting drafted or making NFL teams. So he never got the opportunity to be the guy. In the UFL, he did. He got that moment. He signs a 2-year, $1.98 million deal with the Lions with, $150,000 guaranteed for a guy that didn't get a shot in college to get a shot in the NFL. Pretty darn cool. Let's go to the 49ers, who now we both have an affinity for once again, Michael. And then I know they got your ring, so you've always had that special place in your heart. But George Kittle typically measures in 6'4", 250. He said on the Bussin' with the Boys podcast, he dropped around 30 pounds this offseason because of that core muscle surgery and other injuries. Quote, I couldn't lift. I couldn't do anything with my upper body because of my shoulder, my rib. I couldn't do anything with my lower body because of core muscle surgery. I didn't lift from the Super Bowl until almost mid-March. Quote, my anxiety levels were pretty high. He did say he's hoping to gain back at least 10 more pounds by the regular season. News or noise, the weight drop from Kittle?
Well, I think it is news. And look, he needs his weight. He wants to be a power player. I think what we saw when Rob Gronkowski went on the stretching program and not the lifting program, where he got leaner and he got more pliable, but yet he didn't have the lower body strength. I mean, George knows he needs to get in the gym. He needs to be able to really kind of create a lower body and have that explosion, because he is one of the true, he's a dinosaur. He's a guy that can block on the end of the line. And he can block a 7 technique. He can block an 8 technique. He can block a 9 technique. He doesn't have to block the support end. So he's a dinosaur in that area, and he needs the power to do it. What I got to get, you know what I want for Father's Day? I want one of those Bill Walsh's white. We used to have them when I worked there, 49er. You ever see those white 49er shirt T-shirts that they have? Those are the best. You can still see Walsh in a picture of that with his Sansa belt shorts. You remember that as a 49er fan. You have to remember that.
Beautiful. Let's hit one more of these here. The NFL has been accused in a multi-billion dollar class action lawsuit that dates back about a decade of conspiring with its major TV partners to keep the price of the Sunday ticket package high and therefore difficult for chunks of people to purchase in order to inflate their local TV numbers. And the ratings are there, right? 93 of the top 100 broadcasts last year were NFL games. Commissioner Roger Goodell was on the stand this week with it finally going to trial. News or noise, Michael, that like, is there a world in which the NFL could lose this lawsuit and be on the hook for billions of dollars?
Well, I mean, there's always that potential anytime you enter into a legal arena and a judge and all that. But I think to me, these cases typically get settled. But look, I don't think the NFL wants to, they want to make it so that fans that want to watch the games either are going to sports bars to do it or they're going to watch their team. I don't think they want it. They want it to be fans like me who have to do it for work, right? And so that's a special category. And I think what Goodell said, what actually what Jerry Jones said, look, I mean, if he wanted to charge whatever he wanted to charge for Cowboy games, he could charge a lot more. People will pay for it, you know? So I think what we're seeing in the streaming services, they could. So I mean, I would assume that this is the reason it's going is because the league thinks they have a good case. Mm-hmm.
The argument, of course, from the league that this is a premium product and they can price what they see fit for their item.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. Next week, we here at VSiN are releasing our NFL betting guide, your ultimate resource for the football season, jam-packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, and of course, best bets from all of your favorite show hosts and experts for the upcoming NFL season. To get the guide, though, you got to be a VSiN Pro subscriber. And right now, you can sign up for a VSiN Pro annual subscription for just $199. That's down from the regular price of $240. Plus, we're throwing in an extra month absolutely free when you use our promo code Lombardi. With a VSiN Pro subscription, you'll get exclusive access to premium analysis, expert picks, and advanced betting tools that'll give you an upper hand all year long. Don't miss out on your chance, though. It's a limited time offer. Sign up and save ahead of the NFL season by visiting vsin.com/subscribe and using that promo code Lombardi to claim your discount and bonus month. vsin.com/subscribe, code Lombardi. Great stuff there. Still to come on the Lombardi line as we welcome you back to the show alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you in about 15 minutes. Texans reporter, longtime beat writer for all things Houston, John McClain is going to join the program. At the end of the hour, we're also going to have a little bit of fun with our travel pet peeves. I just wrapped up my inaugural season of the UFL, spring football, and I was traveling every single week for 12 weeks, 2+ flights a week. I have a lot of grievances that I need to air, and Michael travels a ton as well, so we're going to have some fun with that. And speaking of the UFL, Michael, I thought an interesting conversation as producer Elliot and I were talking was all of the things that the UFL is trying to institute, like in addition to, of course, winning games, winning championships and getting players to the NFL, there's a lot that they're doing in terms of technology, in terms of testing out rules that are very interesting. And I wanted to get your perspective on a few that I do think were really great and really successful in the UFL. And if any of these things might be willing to have a look at the NFL level. I did think it was so interesting, by the way, that this past offseason already, the one thing that they did approve was the new kickoff rules that were previously in the XFL that this new version of spring football elected not to use. I'm curious how fans are going to react to the new look of that when the season starts.
Well, from talking to a bunch of people on the new rule and the kickoff rule, and I have talked to a lot of teams, there's two thoughts, right? The Chiefs, for example, they're going to use probably Justin Reed, their safety, because he can kick. They're going to use him to kick if they want the ball in play, because they feel like most special teams coaches feel like you need the 11th tackler. Because it's going to be very difficult to get the right coverage in the right areas. If somebody gets out of their lane, which happens, all of a sudden it could get to the house. So I think there's going to be that, having somebody who could kick, and not all teams do. And then because the ball's only coming to the 30, not the 35, which we all thought, I think people are still going to bang it through the end zone and say, mm-hmm. okay, have it on the 30. We'll give you 5 yards instead of trying to cover this, which could be difficult with a kicker that can't tackle. So it's going to be interesting. I think the preseason is going to be really enlightening on how teams approach it. You know, and most of the coaches who love special teams will try to get the ball in play. The ones that just want clean exchanges will kick it through the end zone.
So that's one rule that the NFL has already adapted and is testing out. There are some that will never happen, and rightfully so. The 1, 2, 3 point after attempt, right, where there's no kicking extra points. They're just runner pass plays. The 4th and 12, 4th and 15 conversion, I don't anticipate that happening, although a 4th and 20 has been proposed instead of an onside kick. But here are some things that I did really like. And even if not to the full extent that we see in the UFL, I think could be interesting in the NFL, starting with the transparency of officials. Now, in the UFL, we have microphones hot that we can pull up on television at the ready to hear officials as they are discussing certain calls. There are also body cameras that were put on the officials this year that had microphone ability and to be able to see from the angle that they're seeing. It's amazing to cut to Dan Blandino in the command center and hear real-time decisions as they're made and then get a follow-up explanation from him, which I'm sure that you're not going to be able to have the availability to do every game in the NFL. And again, if it's not to that extent, that's fine. But to be able to have the ability to record at least what's being said in these moments and share that with viewers, or at least a portion of it, I think would be awesome for NFL fans to hear, instead of just sitting there at the TV saying, why is this call taking so long? You can hear it.
Look, I agree. I think anytime there's communication, the problem is I think the NFL doesn't want to peel back that layer.
Sure.
I think you'd have a hard time getting that passed. I think the thing is they like it. They don't want to have those conversations where people could misinterpret them, because at times we can, right?
Yep.
And I think ultimately it lends itself to being too close to home, where thereafter you get exposed. I mean, you could see it. I mean, what happens with the officials when they know the call is going up to the booth? They hesitate to call. If you feel like you're being mic'd up, are you really going to be honest and say what you think? Probably not. So I think it's great for transparency. It may not be great for having a conflict or a discussion that requires two sides disagree. Mm-hmm. And then once that happens, then the media will just blow that up. Oh, this guy thought it was the right call, this guy didn't. I don't think they want to go down that road.
Well, something like maybe another angle is maybe instead of taking it live, you have similar to a mic'd up that we saw in the NBA, where you hear the wired a little bit later for certain calls.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe that's an option to kind of bring it in stages to an extent. And you just cut what you think is relevant and would make the most sense, and not to make anyone look bad, but to give a better explanation and clean things up could be valuable potentially. Let me hit a couple more of these ones. The fumble out of the end zone rule in the UFL is different. In the NFL, obviously, a fumble in the field of play, it ends up going out of the end zone either along the side or the back. It's a turnover or a touchback for the defensive team. So the other team gets possession, not at the spot of the fumble, but at the 20-yard line, which is a rule I've never really understood or agreed with, especially in a league that's so geared toward offenses, it feels a little too punitive for that.
Yeah.
It also does happen very rarely. I understand that since 2018 in the NFL, it's occurred just 8 total times in the regular season. But every time it happens, there's like collective outrage about it. And it's a big deal for a moment, and the team is pissed off. And then it's like never to be heard of again. It's brought up in the meetings and nothing ever happens with it. Defense gets rewarded, in my opinion, for doing nothing. And I don't know. What do you think about that? So in the UFL, the offense retains the ball wherever the fumble occurred.
Yeah, I think that to me, I don't like that rule either, because you fumbled it, and just because it goes through the, see, I think what will happen
is
people
else,
will just
Michael,
try to kick it through the end zone to keep the ball.
Here's my thing is, like, anywhere else on the field that a fumble occurs, the defense has to jump on it to get possession. In this case, if you're diving for the goal line and it goes out at the one, the other team gets the ball at the 20 yard line. I don't get that.
Well, let's play devil's advocate here. Okay, I'm jumping towards the end zone, and I extend the ball out, right, to try to break the plane, and the ball, and you click it out. We've seen this happen numerous times. The ball gets clicked out, but it doesn't touch the line. then you get rewarded by having it on the 1-inch line. Meanwhile, that's a stupid thing to do. Like, how do you get rewarded for that?
So maybe like,
I don't disagree with you that going through the end zone, you know, I think to me, and it does penalize, the offense gains a full advantage if they get the ball back. So everybody's going to just extend it. Josh Allen will score 87 touchdowns like that. You know, just hit the ball over, and if it goes out of the end zone, who cares? I'm going to get it back at the 1-inch line.
I think the issue with it is like,
to me, you're right, though.
There's not a right answer yet. So maybe it's not spotting the ball at that position like the UFL does, but I think that there could be an alternate. And if we all got our heads together, we could think of a better way than where the defense gets the ball at the 20 and gets it. Like, I just think that it's a silly rule where it's at right now. And when it happens,
I think you're right. You put that the right way. There's not the right answer yet.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way of saying it. I really do. I don't think we've come up with it because I think you don't want to penalize, you don't want to reward or penalize as much as we have.
Since we've only got 2 minutes left in this segment, I'm going to cruise through these last couple. Sideline video. Go. I didn't realize how few people didn't know that in the NFL, it's pictures that you're seeing on those Surface Pros. It's not video. And a lot of coaches were very anti the idea of like, this will eliminate competitive advantage. It takes away from coaching skills. So the proposal hasn't been brought up even since 2018. But in the UFL, everyone that I have talked to absolutely loves it. They love the access and time for real-time adjustments. Both teams get access to the same footage. Also, intentional pass interference. So if there is an egregious and intentional foul on PI, which, yes, I know at times it can be difficult to officiate intent, but we do it with targeting. We do it in basketball with a flagrant one versus a flagrant two, right? The ball will get spotted at the place of a foul. If it is unintentional, it's a 15-yard penalty. So kind of combining the NFL and college football rule, which I like, they're separating the two so that you don't have a guy pulling down a receiver, or conversely, you don't have a quarterback that's trying to just chuck it downfield and get a call. And then the ball spouting technology, which is going to be introduced and tested in the NFL this preseason. It's such a simple and obvious change. No need to trot out the chain gang. Still, the problem is going to be where the ball is spotted. And I think that's something that not a lot of people realize, that this is, once the ball is spotted, there is technology that tells you how close it is to the first down marker. It does not tell you if the official has put it in the right spot. And that's something that I think from a technology standpoint still needs to be developed.
NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, don't forget about all the great betting tools and content at VSiN.com. Best bets from our show hosts and guests, betting splits, pro tips, trends, and of course, best practices. And right now on the homepage, betting previews for Game 5 in both the NBA and Stanley Cup Finals, as well as some NFL futures talk. Our own Mike Somich has an article up right now titled, Why Andy Reid is a Bad Coach of the Year Bet, stressing the importance of not only understanding how narratives come into play in awards markets, but applying probability percentages to those narratives. Really interesting read. Again, live right now at VSiN.com. Sticking with the NFL theme, a team with a lot of question marks in 2024, the New England Patriots. To help us talk it all over, we welcome in Tom Curran on the Progressive Guest Line. Knows this team inside and out. Patriots insider, can catch him on NBC Sports Boston. And between the Tom Brady jersey retirement, the new coaching regime in New England, and the Celtics in a potential closeout game today, I can't imagine what it's like in your neck of the woods. How are things, Tom? Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. We are locked and loaded. Another beautiful June day. Mike remembers these days well when they're just pristine and perfect. So we got it good, as usual, here in New England, fortunately for us.
Yeah, you got the closeout. You had the big, you know, an unseasonably warm June's coming. A heat wave's coming towards you. But let's talk about Drake May and the expectations for him. And also the fact that, what do you sense based on the schedule that they have early is, do you think there's any chance we'll see Drake May as a rookie?
I do. I think we'll see him as a rookie. And I think so much of it, Mike, is going to be contingent on how the team does. And obviously they are, you know, ticketed as a team that's going to be a top five picking team again. But, and they have a difficult schedule. But if you look at the opportunities for him to come in and play, I look at it as probably not until after Halloween. And what it gets interesting, and you could probably speak to this as well, is, well, what if the team is 3-5 or 4-6 or whatever it is at that point? Do you want to say to everybody, okay, we'll bring in the rookie? Because by then, Jacoby Brissett might have played pretty well to get them to that point. So it's an interesting way to look at it, because he's not going to get the amount of work. I think what they're doing is bracing us for the idea that don't even look at what's going on behind the curtain. It's Jacoby until further notice.
Well, Tom, I'm curious your thoughts on whether or not seeing Drake May would be a good thing or not for his development. Like, is the just the importance of getting NFL reps a good thing for him? Or I feel like a common theme that we talk about in the NFL all the time is more young quarterbacks are ruined than they are developed. Should he continue to sit and develop and grow from that standpoint? Like, how do you view those two items?
I view it as a team that really does not have a very good offensive line, and they have a lot of mid-tier wide receivers. They don't have anybody explosive on offense. So to me, if you're plugging somebody down, like, say, for instance, J.J. McCarthy in Minnesota, he's going to be plunked down in an offense with an offensive coach and a system that's been there and has a great opportunity to succeed. This is going to be a first-year offensive coordinator, a first-year head coach who's going to defer to the offensive coordinator and to Ben McAdoo to run the offense. So to me, I think you could do some damage to a player if you're not, as a coaching staff, equipped yet. I'm not saying they're ill-equipped, but not equipped yet to know what your personnel does for you on offense. And the offensive line, Mike, we looked at it last year. Yes, sir.
No, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It was so bad on the offensive line last year with Mac that it didn't even give him a chance to really prove that he was as bad as he ended up being. So to me, you don't want to go starting down that same road again. If you can't protect him, if he doesn't have people to throw to, you're just going to retard his progress.
Well, you know, we often would say when I was there, the hardest job in football is going to be to replace the head coach because of all the titles he's won. And Mayo walks into a job that he's not going to be involved with the offense. He's not going to be involved with the defense. He's not going to be involved with the kicking game. Explain to me what Mayo is going to be involved with.
Well, to me, and I think it's interesting when you look at the Patriots and the way they did it, Mike, for all those years, Bill was more of a hands-on head coach than I think a lot of head coaches generally are. In terms of, you know, he coached the offensive line for the last 2 years, as you know. His involvement with the defense was kind of minimal last year. So to me, Mayo was following the path of, like, say, a Tomlin, for instance, or a Sirianni, somebody who is supposed to be the overseer. And you go to your coordinators and your quote-unquote department heads as the coordinators to see how their managers of the positions are doing. So it's going to be a much more conventional, I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong on that, it's a much more conventional NFL setup than what the Patriots have had. Because you always knew where the buck was going to stop with Bill.
Tom Curran, Patriots insider, joining us on the Progressive Guest Line. You can follow him on X at Tom E. Curran. But let's keep going with the Jerod Mayo of it all. What's your perception been of him to this point as he has taken over? How has he been received, and what have you noticed most from him, your big takeaways?
I think what's really interesting is, as much as Bill underachieved in the last couple of years, free agency-wise, draft-wise, some of the decisions that he made, as much as he underachieved, I think that people look past the 4-13 record in the 2022 season and they really miss Bill. And they look at Mayo and say, well, you have to live up to the things that Bill did from 2000 to 2019. And I think that's a very difficult thing for Mayo to even really grasp. Now, when we look at all the times, Mike, you saw it too, that Robert Kraft's saber rattled toward Bill. I need to see improvement. We need to be a playoff team. We have playoff potential. I think we're going to be good. And if not, you know, there'll have to be some consequences. Really forced his hand to, when the Patriots were as bad as they were, he had to make a move. I don't think that they wanted to make that move. I don't think they ever believed they were going to be moving on from Bill Belichick when they were entering last season. I don't think anyone saw a 4-13 record. So the entire timeline has been accelerated. They're not ready yet for a new coach, but they were not ready to have Bill do the rebuild. That's basically what it amounts to. They didn't want Bill to be in charge of spending the free agent money, developing the new quarterback, and that is really where the rubber meets the road. So I think they're a year ahead of where they expected to be in their succession plan. And I think that as a result, it's going to be a big learning year for Mayo.
What do you think is acceptable year for the Kraft family with Jonathan involved, with Robin Glazer involved, with Elliot Wolf now running everything, with Bill not coaching and developing a quarterback, Covington running the defense? You know, what do you think a successful season looks like to you, Tom?
Just have it look better by the end of the year. And it, you know, you were here for some of those times where traditionally the Patriots after Thanksgiving were a beast. No one wanted to deal with them. And really since 2019 after Thanksgiving, they have floundered. So if you can look better toward the end of the season, then that's a victory because it's not a good team. It doesn't have a lot of talent. And it's got a massive learning curve ahead of it. So if you are, look, you remember 1993 as well as anybody, Drew Bledsoe's first year in the league. They were 1-11 through 12 games. Bledsoe had a 5-pick game. The second game they won that year, they won 7-2. But they closed the season with 4 consecutive wins. Can you have that kind of a close to your December and signal some growth on the coaching staff, signal some growth at quarterback position? It's just, it's a radical difference from where the Patriots were. And you saw that when the schedule came out and the fact that we got nothing but Sunday at 1.
Also, when the schedule came out, you couldn't help but notice how challenging it is. We all knew what the opponents were going to be prior to that schedule release day, but when it did come out and you saw everything laid out in front of you on paper, what was your immediate reaction?
It's an unbelievably difficult time for them to try and rebuild because there's no off weeks, especially in their division with Josh Allen, Tua, and the complement of players Tua has around him, and Aaron Rodgers, if he plays like Aaron Rodgers and makes it into the season. So in their own division, they got 2 challenging games against very good quarterbacks. They're outside the division against very good quarterbacks. I mean, I think defensively, it's going to be similar to last year. What they need to have is a uniform way of approaching how to play offensive football, that they can actually attack it in a way that seems as if there's a plan there. Because in the last 2 years, post-Josh, it was very haphazard because they weren't sold on the quarterback. And then they had made the missteps with the coaching succession plan. And then once they were out on Jones, it was really just biding time to get to the next year. So to me, it's going to be a really, really challenging schedule for them. And it's going to be a lot of times where the Patriots are small print at the bottom of the agate in terms of people looking to see how they did.
Tom, before we let you go real quickly, do the Boston Celtics win tonight? Are they raising banner 18 after this?
They are raising banner 18. Okay. I think, I mean, they're just so deep that, you know, I think Luka Doncic is the best player in the series. And he played like it the other night and he engaged himself on defense. But the Celtics just have waves of talented players. Their 5th or 6th best player would be the 3rd best player on Dallas. So to me, the Celtics just have too much there and we'll win the game.
I'm right there with you. Tonight's the night. Tom, thank you so much for the time.
Thanks,
we appreciate
Tom.
You.
Thank you,
Tom. Thank you. Pleasure. Thank you so much.
Again, follow him on X at Tom E. Curran. Doing a great job. You can catch him as well on NBC Sports Boston. Patriots Insider. We're going to hit the break.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
All right, get excited. We're wrapping up hour one with our first college football breakdown of the summer. Let's go.
Let's do it.
Okay, so no secret.
Goldilocks.
Yes, gridiron Goldilocks. Here we go. Like, it's no secret, though. There's been a lot of movement in college football this past offseason. And I'm not just talking about transfer portal or conference realignment, but one of the most volatile seasons that we have seen in terms of head coaching movement, especially at the top. You think about three of the four head coaches that were playing in the college football playoff last year are no longer with their former team. Most notably, of course, the retirement of Nick Saban at Alabama. Jim Harbaugh leaves Michigan after winning a national championship to head back to the NFL. And then Kalen DeBoer replaces Saban from Washington, goes to Alabama. So lots of movement here. And before we get into some of these numbers, Michael, which we will, as we set the stage for college football as a whole, I know for me, when I dive in, I'm looking at rosters, I'm looking at teams for continuity, for returning production, head coaches and coordinators coming back. How significant is it in college football that some of these major programs are having a shift at the biggest role out there?
It's hard because you're asking the coaches to now make decisions on talent from some other team to their team. Okay, we're going to replace this guy with that guy. Well, maybe he's not as good as the guy we just lost. You think he is in the spring, but in the fall he may not be. So it becomes a little bit of a problem. And then can you keep your quarterback? I mean, that's the big issue. Miami finally has a quarterback this year, and Mario Cristobal has Cameron Ward, who he was able to convince to not go into the draft, leave Washington State, come down there, gives them a bona fide chance to compete maybe for the ACC title, something that I'm sure the Miami boosters have been hoping for a long time. So really a challenge. I mean, Jalen Milroe, now he gets to board, which might be the best thing for him because we know DeBoer was able to really get Michael Penix to play at a high level, whether it be at Indiana or at Washington. So the change can be good, but you need some continuity within the team, especially at the quarterback position.
So let's go there first with Alabama. And what we're going to do here is similar to what we've done in a lot of the NFL divisions and certain things that we've done throughout the year. Are these odds and expectations for certain teams with the new head coach or an added coach to the roster too high, too low, or just right? Gridiron Goldilocks College Football Edition. And with Alabama, Kalen DeBoer obviously leaves Washington to replace what is a 7-time national championship winning head coach in Nick Saban. There was a mass exodus of players who left because, hey, I signed on to play for Nick Saban. This isn't Nick Saban anymore. So between that and the players that left for the draft, they rank 115th in college football returning production. But you mentioned what DeBoer has done for quarterbacks. Jalen Milroe, fourth on the odds board at 14-1 to win the Heisman. They also bring back another star leader, defensive back, Malachi Moore. In terms of their odds, you look at them on the screen, 14-1 to win a national championship. They're plus 850. Weird to see them fourth in the SEC behind Georgia, Texas, and Ole Miss. Their win total, 9.5. When you think about Alabama, what you know about Kalen DeBoer, are these numbers in your brain right now too high, too low, or just about right for where you see in year one in this new era?
I think they're just about right. Look, let's face it. Anybody who's walking in to replace Nick Saban is going to have a hard job. I mean, he's not an easy man to replace. He's not an easy man to replace offensively, defensively, or in the total team structure. But he does have Milroe, and we know that he's a good coach. DeBoer has won everywhere, whether it's been in Augustana in South Dakota or Fresno State or at Washington. So give him a little bit of time, but I think to think he's going to win a national championship without his team coming back makes it very difficult. 14-1 to me seems about right.
With the win total at 9.5, Alabama has finished with 10 or more wins in each of the last 13 seasons. And DeBoer, give him credit too. He's won at least 10 in 8 of his 9 seasons as a college football head coach. To your point, he's won everywhere he's been. 25-3 the last 2 seasons at Washington is your reigning AP coach of the year in the sport. Let's go to who replaced him at the University of Washington. Jed Fish, someone you know very well. This is the next ripple effect in college football. And it's very bizarre to see a team that played for a national championship last year with title odds 200-1 and a win total of 7. More difficult conference now with the marquee Pac-12 teams moving into what is a top-heavy Big Ten. Gone is Michael Penix Jr., Roma Dunze, and others. Got hit from the transfer portal a bit because some folks wanted to go with Kalen DeBoer to Washington. They bring back just 19% of the production they had a year ago on offense, the lowest percentage in the country. But they do have Will Rogers, quarterback I'm pretty high on. And we saw, Michael, you know, the dramatic change that Jed Fish brought to the University of Arizona. As you look at some of these numbers, especially that win total of 7, you think odds too high, too low, or just right for what Fish can bring to the table?
I think they're actually too high. Seven's going to be hard for Jed. I know he probably won't want to hear it, but look, I think one of the things Jed did such a good job at Arizona was keeping the team together. And that ended up backfiring on him, Stormy, because when he took the Washington job, I think he felt like a lot of those Arizona players were going to follow him to Washington. Some did, but Noah Fita didn't. You know, McMillan, the receiver, didn't. Some of the offensive linemen that are really good didn't. And so he's had to really repair. 21 of the 22 starters are gone from the Washington team. This is a completely different team. And it's going to be a challenge to see how it reacts. Now he gets Desmond Williams as a 5-4 star quarterback out of Arizona who was headed to go to the University of Arizona that he convinced him to go to Washington. That will help. Will Rogers is going to have a hard time playing effectively in this system. They typically don't. I think this is going to be a tough year. Jed, when he first went to Arizona on the rebuild, he lost to Northern Arizona. They won one game that year.
Yeah, against Cal.
And then he won 5-6 the next year. It's going to take some time to get this right. And if he can, but I think he's going to need 3 years to rebuild this program the way he wants to do it. I think walking into that job this year is going to be really hard.
And that was exactly my thought, Michael. I firmly believe that Jed Fish will have success in Washington, but like it was in Arizona, it's going to be a slow burn. It's going to take time for him to get his people in there. That first season, to your point, one win, and it was against Cal. And I believe that was a COVID-impacted game, too, where Cal didn't even have everybody that they were supposed to have for that game. It was a crazy situation.
That's right.
Let's go to Ohio State here. Yes, Ryan Day is still the head coach, but boy, do they get a unique situation here with the offensive coordinator they bring in, because Chip Kelly, at the end of last year, all of the conversation was, okay, if Chip Kelly leaves UCLA, it's because he's going to go take a coordinator job in the NFL. Nope. He ultimately leaves his head coaching gig at UCLA to be an OC at Ohio State, which now coincidentally is in the same conference as UCLA. But could he be the missing piece for Ryan Day to get over the hump, right? We talk about the record that he has against Big Ten teams and then the record he has against Michigan. He gets to coach Will Howard, who I think is an upgrade from Kyle McCord at quarterback. You look at these odds for Ohio State. They are one of the teams that has the highest win total in college football, minus 650 to be in the playoff, plus 160 favorite to win the Big Ten. Too high, too low, just right the expectations for Ohio State.
Oh, I think they're probably just a tad too low. I think they got to be higher. Look, this comes down to one game. He's got to beat Michigan, right? Mm-hmm. He's got to beat Michigan. Hasn't done it. And I'm not talking about Chip Kelly. I'm talking about Ryan Day. Chip Kelly left UCLA because he got tired of having no support. He couldn't get financial support. He couldn't get the university behind him. Nobody really cared about football. They're playing out in Pasadena. Nobody goes to the games. It was like, what am I doing? You know, I think he went there believing it could become the new Oregon because it's got such great potential. But no one seems interested. In Ohio State, they're really interested. I don't think you could set the expectations high enough. I think they got to be higher because they're going to be better defensively. He'll make the quarterback play better. They got to come back and beat. They got to come back and beat Michigan. And with Martindale as the defensive coordinator against Chip Kelly, that's going to be a fun pro game to watch how it's handled, because it's not going to be a pushover because Martindale understands how to defend Chip Kelly's style of play.
Ryan Day is 40-0 against Big Ten teams not named Michigan, 1-3 against the Wolverines. Let's real quickly, last minute here, let's go to Michigan because they elevate Sherrone Moore to that role. And this is not going to be an easy task for him because Jim Harbaugh did not leave him a turnkey national championship winning roster.
No.
They're 128th in returning production across this roster. Remember, there are only 134 teams in college football, ladies and gentlemen, and they play three of the top four teams on the DraftKings odds board favored to win a national championship. You see their odds on the board, 6-1 in the Big Ten, win total of 9, too high, too low, or just right?
Oh, I think they're too low. I think it's going to be hard. Look, it's hard to follow. Now, look, the one thing is Harbaugh set the culture within there, and Moore's a good coach, and he'll repair it. He did a great job last year. But you don't lose that much talent. And you got to develop a new quarterback with McCarthy leaving last year. Going to be a tough job. I think they're a little too low. I don't think Michigan. Look, when Jim first went to Michigan, it wasn't easy for him to get started either.
No doubt about it. I wish Sherrone Moore luck for as fun as the ride was last year, we're resetting out there in Ann Arbor. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we're resetting for hour two here of the Lombardi Line. Recap a little bit of the Stanley Cup final action from last night and news in the NBA. We'll be right back.